Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Got a question for you. Which would you rather listen to? This? Or this? On the one hand, that first piece is a Brazilian song, The Girl from Ipanema, all about sun and sand and pretty girls and languid tropical days. The second piece caused a riot. Problem is, that nice, mellow first piece probably means you're on hold, waiting for a customer service representative, while the pounding, dissonant second piece probably means you're gearing up for a major musical anniversary. Now, which one would you rather listen to? I thought so. Nobody likes having to deal with customer service, which makes the new CD from Aesopus magazine even more surprising because its theme is customer service. Hear your frustrations turned into varied and often hilarious songs in just a bit. Also, live electropop from the British artist known as Little Boots. So what about this music? Well, this is The Rite of Spring, Igor Stravinsky's legendary ballet score that provoked the most famous riot in music history. That was 100 years ago this month, and a lot of people are marking the occasion. Here at Soundcheck, we've got the pianist Vicky Chow from the Bang on a Can All-Stars playing the piece in a rare solo piano arrangement on the actual date of the anniversary, May 29th, in the Green Space at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. But for now, let's find out why the Rite of Spring is so important 100 years later. Joining me is Leonard Slatkin, music director of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra and author of the new book, Conducting Business, Unveiling the Mystery Behind the Maestro. Leonard, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Nice to be here.
So it is the 100th anniversary this month of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. Why do we still talk about this piece with such reverence 100 years later?
There are a few works, not many, which did change the course of musical life. I usually point to five of them. The Eroica Symphony.
By Beethoven.
Wagner's Tristan and Isolde. Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. The Rite of Spring. And also Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire. These five pieces, to me, were starting points, departure points for composers. They showed that the composers had radically changed their own mind about how music was, but they also shaped the thoughts and minds of their contemporaries. The Stravinsky falls at a time, because he's concurrent with Schoenberg, mm-hmm. when, for the first time in music history, music went on two divergent paths. It's easy to say and see how the Baroque composers became the classical composers, and how the classical composers became the Romantic composers. But in the 20th century, both Schoenberg and Stravinsky were veering in exactly opposite directions. Stravinsky was creating a primitive kind of music with Rite of Spring, and Schoenberg was moving to a more academic kind of music. Stravinsky's music, whether he said it was true or not, was influenced by Russian folk song, mm-hmm. and very much informed by the language. Schoenberg, not so much so, although the German language played a big part. My conducting teacher, Jean Morel, claimed that he was, as a young person, at the premiere of The Rite of Spring. And, of course, his students would say, what was it really like? He says, he doesn't know because he fell asleep. So I was never sure that was really true. But I think the piece remains something that when we hear, especially for the first time, we're pulled into this world that is so different and so unlike anything else that exists. Mm-hmm. It's a unique piece. From everything that I've read, the controversy surrounding the performance didn't center so much on the music, but rather the costumes that the ballet company used. Up until that time, it was the traditional tutus and froofy things. For this performance, Nijinsky had everybody wearing full cover, almost like sack dresses, but not too pronounced. So there was no chance to judge the form of the dancers in this. And we also know that factions were set up to protest in advance. We also know that this was the opening of a season, and it was preceded by a performance of, I believe, Les Sylphides, a very traditional ballet. So you have a benefit audience who doesn't want to be upset, and here comes the Rite of Spring with all these new things. Music is different, dancing is different, costumes are different. So that furor became part of legend.
Right.
Interestingly enough, as soon as Monteux, the conductor,
Pierre Monteux,
started bringing the work into the concert hall, which was fairly right away, it was accepted as a masterpiece immediately.
Yeah.
So we know now that it's much more about the elements that were the non-musical ones that became the source of difficulty.
We're talking about Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. The 100th anniversary is actually May 29th. We will be celebrating by having a solo piano performance by the pianist Vicky Chow on loan from the Bang on a Can All-Stars. Pierre Boulez learned the piece by playing a two-piano version of
Which Stravinsky made.
With Olivier Messiaen.
Yes. I
have not heard of a solo piano version of it, although obviously Stravinsky wrote it at the piano.
Right. And that should be spectacular. It'd be a great virtuoso feat. I heard it, I think, in a YouTube video played by two organists. And it worked surprisingly well. I thought it wasn't bad at all.
There's also a two-guitar version.
Yes.
Which I think works less well just because of the limited color range.
But still, there's something Russian about it.
Yeah.
Again, it's worth remembering that it was one of the high points of the film Fantasia. So we're talking the 1930s, late 30s, or maybe the 40s. The point was, it was already work that was known to audiences. People think, it's only recently that it's become so popular. It was popular a long time ago. And it's always nice to have different versions. I have one, a recording at home of it, part of it played on steel drums.
Wow. So it really has sort of penetrated into the culture in surprising ways. And yet, Leonard, people still walk out.
They do. They do. I think.
Why is that?
I think the nature of dissonance, the nature of music where, for the most part, you don't really come out humming the tunes, that still troubles people.
Mm-hmm.
You're 100 years later, and people are still being bothered by it. But a lot of that music, Schoenberg is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The Detroit Symphony has presented the Four Ives Symphonies here in New York, and we know that the Fourth Symphony is still very tough going, even though it's written only 3 years after the Rite of Spring. So there are always those people. And I don't think it's the rhythmic elements. I really think it's the harmony, the dissonance that creates problem for people.
Now, have you, you've recorded it with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra way back when, like 20 years ago. You recently did a performance, which is online, with the Lyon National Orchestra.
Yep.
What about in Detroit?
We did it this year, but not with me conducting. It was with Raphael Frubeck de Burgos. And I thought it would be nice, actually. He asked if he could do it, and I said, absolutely, why not? But it was fun to do in Lyon because you have so many people who play in the French style. It's a different sound than what we're used to with American orchestras. The bassoon, for instance, at the beginning, it's a very beautiful sound, but it's perhaps a little smaller than you might get from an American bassoonist. And it came closer, probably, to the sound that would have been heard when it was premiered.
There's a famous story from that premiere, in amongst all the fighting and the catcalls and stuff, of Saint-Saëns, the composer, in attendance, practically, you know, old and practically blind at that point. And the piece begins with that kind of high, strangled bassoon sound. And Saint-Saëns turns to his companion and says, "What instrument is that?" And the companion says, "Maestro, it's a bassoon." And Saint-Saëns is ripping it. "No, no, that is not the way a bassoon should sound."
Saint-Saëns, of course, and a very underrated composer, I believe, one who lived into the 1920s, but one who was very conservative. It also brings up something that's a bigger issue and something I'm probably going to address in a concert season. The composers who really had to make a choice in terms of musically entering the 20th century. We talked about how Schoenberg and Stravinsky were these polar opposites, at least at that time. But what about the composers who were left somewhere else, the Rachmaninoffs, the Mahlers, the Korngolds, even Hindemith, so many others, composers who almost had to say, am I going to be a 20th century composer, or are my roots, like Richard Strauss, very much centered in the 19th century? So you can understand Saint-Saëns' reaction. It wasn't what he grew up with, it wasn't what he was used to, and something he just didn't like.
Stravinsky's Rite of Spring turns 100 on May 29th, and we are going to be marking the occasion on May 29th downstairs in the green space with a live performance of the entire Rite of Spring on solo piano by Vicky Chow. I have to say, I'm having been familiar with the two piano version. I can't imagine what this is going to sound like.
I think it's also one that'll be fun, if you could, to watch it.
Yeah.
Just to see, okay, how's this going to work? How are you going to get all those notes in?
We will be doing some video streaming of it from the green space downstairs.
I do have something that anybody who is interested, I think I read it from Michael Tilson Thomas. We were talking about the work, and he'd done this video of it. And clearly, this is coincidental, but the last dance, the sacrificial dance, a young woman gives up her life at the end. And Michael pointed out that if you take the double bass line, which has four notes, and read the last chord, that crunch, just read it from bottom to top, the notes are, successively, D, E, A, and D. Isn't that amazing?
Which wouldn't have meant anything to Stravinsky.
No, he spoke a little French, but he certainly didn't speak English at the time. But to have the last note dead in those notes, little odd.
And on that note, or cluster of notes.
Cluster, yes.
Leonard Slatkin, music director of the Detroit Symphony. His new book is called Conducting Business, Unveiling the Mystery Behind the Maestro. Great to have you with us.
Great to see you. Thanks a lot. Happy birthday, Rite of Spring.
Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, performed by the Lyon National Orchestra with Leonard Slatkin conducting. And don't forget, tickets are available now for Soundcheck and Q2 Music's Rite of Spring 100th Anniversary Celebration. Vicky Chow of the Bang on a Can All-Stars performs a solo piano arrangement of the work in the green space on Wednesday, May 29th. That's the exact date of the anniversary, 7 p.m., Tickets available at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Up next, we talk about a new CD devoted to the idea of customer service. It's from the twice-yearly journal known as Aesopus. Actually, can you hold, please? Thanks for your patience. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Aesopus Magazine is known for its unusual visual design, wide range of cultural coverage, but every issue of the twice-yearly magazine also comes with a themed CD. Aesopus commissions works by songwriters and composers around that theme, and this issue's is one that most of us are all too familiar with. Customer service. Yes, that is the theme. Todd Lippe is the editor of Aesopus. He joins me here in the studio to explain himself. You have some explaining to do, Todd.
I do have some explaining to do, John.
First of all, welcome back.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, as always.
We have done some past themes of yours, Slonimsky's Thesaurus of Musical Scales. You've done Fear Itself, the Craigslist Misconnections, all of which are kind of fun and funky and customer service?
It was a cathartic thing for me. We moved to Brooklyn at the beginning of the fall last year, and I just had this, I mean, everybody deals with customer service representatives all the time anyway, but I had this kind of block of just dealing constantly with customer service reps. Phone stuff, dealing with moving things, dealing with the new, you know, internet connection, et cetera, et cetera. And at some point, I just became so enormously frustrated, as all of us do when we're dealing with these things. And I thought, you know, I need to figure out a way to channel this into something productive and good. So I came up with, I was on hold. I think it was on a Verizon call. I was like, you know, I should just give this theme to musicians and see what they can do with it. And of course, everybody jumped because everybody has these same, you know, this
it is
rage,
a universal
this hidden
experience.
Rage. Yeah, exactly.
So does the theme carry through to the rest of the magazine, or is it specific to the CD?
It's almost always just specific to the CD. Occasionally, there's a theme to the entire issue. We did a television issue about five issues ago, and for that, we asked musicians to pick a TV show and write a song based on it.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, but this is customer service, and when you talk about customer service, one of the great frustrations is when you don't get to talk to customer service.
Yes.
You hear the
so
music
true.
On hold.
Exactly.
So Dirty Beaches composed a song called Please Hold. Let's hear a little bit from Aesopus Magazine and the themed CD on customer service. That is Dirty Beaches with a piece called Please Hold. That is wonderfully annoying. From Aesopus, the twice-yearly magazine that comes with a themed CD. This is Aesopus Volume 19. The theme of the CD is customer service. Todd Lippe is the founder and editor of Aesopus. He's here with us on Soundcheck. You know, every afternoon at 2 o'clock, we do live music here in the studio, which we stream live at soundcheck.org. And because there's nothing on the stream before us, we have some music on hold so that when people go to soundcheck.org and it's 2 minutes to two or 1 minute to two, they know they're in the right place. And so we've put together our own soundcheck hold music. Listen to this. You're about to listen to Soundcheck. Please hold. Your ears are very important to us. Please hold on, and our program will begin shortly. Et cetera, et cetera. And the little please hold announcements get progressively stranger
as
the hold music goes along. So, you know, the idea of music on hold, of customer service, yes, it is a universal experience. One currently being shared by trombonist and composer Jacob Garchik, because we've kept him on hold while, Todd, we've been talking here in the studio. How did you get Jacob involved in this CD?
It's one of these crazy New York, and I even say specifically Brooklyn stories. Uh-huh. We recently moved to
Brooklyn.
By
the way, hi, Jacob. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, Jacob.
Hi.
So my partner and I were in line at Pock Pock New York, this Thai restaurant in Brooklyn, and we were the last people for the first seating, and we got to the front of the line, and the hostess said, "We only have a table for four. Sorry, you're two. It's not going to work." And we turned around and said, "Anybody else? Another couple, whatever." And Jacob stepped up with his girlfriend, and we had a lovely dinner together. I'd already gotten 11 tracks for the CD. I thought it was finished. We learned Jacob had this fantastic musical history and background, and I invited him, and he did a track, and it leads the CD. It's a fantastic track.
Now, Jacob, I rather enjoyed your record of last year called The Heavens, your so-called atheist gospel trombone record. You are a trombonist. How did you approach the idea of doing a piece about customer service?
We came up with the idea, actually, my wife and I, Eliza Bates and I, of a meditation on student debt and calling up your student debt company to find out what your balance is. And combining that with all these people who are working in coffee shops who probably have mountains of student debt and who are just waiting for the pitiful contributions to the tip jar.
So there's a bit of social commentary here.
Yeah, it's a silly song, but it's sort of a serious topic.
Let's hear a little bit of Jacob Garchik's The Tip Jar, his contribution to Aesopus Volume 19, Customer Service.
One iced tea, one iced tea, one iced tea, no ice, one iced tea, one iced tea, one iced tea, no ice, no ice. I ordered two hot chocolates. I ordered two hot chocolates. I ordered two hot chocolates. And a double tall decaf latte. 25 cents.
That is just a little bit of Jacob Garchik's song, The Tip Jar, his contribution to Aesopus Magazine's 19th volume. The theme of the CD is customer service. Todd Lippe, the founder and editor of Aesopus, is here with me in the studio. Jacob, the trombonist and songwriter, is on the line. And Jacob, despite the kind of cheesy synthesizer percussion and the processed vocals, there is a real air of verisimilitude in your story here. Was this inspired by anything that you experienced yourself?
Sure. I'm a former student, and everybody I know is a former student, and everybody has debt, and everybody likes to go to coffee shops and thinks about that tip jar, and everybody who works in the coffee shops is a student or a former student, so it's all around us in every way.
Right. So you hear the voice on the phone listing the balance, $155,000, and then you hear 25 cents in the tip jar. It's a sad song then, Jacob.
It's, yes. But maybe there's hope. Maybe, you know, my song is going to cure society of our student debt problem.
So, Todd, what kind of guidelines do you give the musicians that you invite to take part?
Very, very basic and very low-key. The only request usually is follow the theme. It can be an oblique angle on the theme. It can mm-hmm. be something very far from literal, but just something that will tie in some way to this theme, and right. that it has to be an original song.
So, and many people on the CD did not, like, you know, go explicitly into storytelling mm-hmm. the way Jacob mm-hmm. did, but Jacob does, on the song called Tip Jar. And Jacob Garchick, the latest album's called The Heavens, the atheist gospel trombone album. It's a very cool record. You should check it out. Jacob, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jacob Garchick on the line. Todd Lippy here in the studio. He is the founder and editor of Aesopus, a twice-yearly magazine that focuses on design and culture and always comes with a themed CD. So the various musicians who took part in the CD come at the topic of customer service from various angles, some of them purely instrumental, like right. the Please Hold music that we heard earlier. Jens Lehmann, though, it took me a while to figure out what he was even talking about in this song. What is he talking about in this song?
Apparently he lived in Australia for quite a while, and he got apparently a fan somehow got his address, and I think the fan was maybe a bit off,
mm-hmm.
and would send him really bizarre packages filled with dead animals, food, very bizarre things. And apparently Australia has this very, very intense customs service.
Absolutely. You can't even get food into the... You can't take a turkey sandwich off the plane into right. into Australia. I'm not kidding either.
Really?
Yeah.
So obviously this was a problem for him, and he kept getting all these calls from customs saying, you know, you need to come in and explain what's going on here, what's the problem. So this song basically comes from that experience of dealing with these packages with the customs service people in Australia.
All right. But he is a Swedish singer and songwriter,
Jens
Lehmann. And the song is called Regarding a Package.
Yes, I am calling regarding a package. Long story who it's from. I believe it might contain a dead animal. Been told it's stuck in customs for some reason. I think the earth just trembled under my
such a poignant little song by Jens Lehmann about someone trying to send him a dead animal in a box and not getting through customs or their customer service people. So Regarding a Package is the name of the song. It is also on the customer service CD that comes with Aesopus Magazine Volume 19, the Spring 2013 edition is out now. And Todd Lippy is the founder and editor of Aesopus, exercising some of his own ghosts from Aesopus's move to Brooklyn.
Exactly.
Dealing with customer service quite a lot. There is one other song on the CD I wanted to ask you about, and that is Richard Swift of the Shins does a song called The Food Poisoning, the title of which is pretty much what the song is about. It is a graphic and disgusting little tune about him getting food poisoning. How does that relate to the theme of customer service?
This is one of the more oblique relations,
I would think.
He actually, in the song, he says, I was asked to write a song about customer service, but I couldn't come up with a song about customer service, so I'm writing a song about food poisoning. But it is kind of about customer service.
So because he mentions the theme, that's good enough for you.
It's better than that because it is essentially about customer service. He worked as a kid at Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Schmentucky Fried Chicken, whatever.
I can't tell you what the name of the restaurant was, but it rhymed with Kentucky Fried Chicken. After I tired of the job there and JoJo's, I went in to pick up my last check. As I arrived, I was greeted with a brand new fried chicken wrap. Not wanting to be rude, I quickly ate the wrap. I gathered my check and drove my 1995 baby blue Chevy Cavalier home. About 3 hours later, that's when it hit me.
the food poisoning.
Well, easy enough for us to laugh at Richard Swift's discomfort and misfortune. The song is called The Food Poisoning. It's one of the songs on Aesopus Magazine, Volume 19, CD, Customer Service. Todd Lippy, you have outdone yourself in terms of coming up with a bizarro theme for this edition's CD. Good to see you again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
The spring 2013 issue of Aesopus is out now. This is Soundcheck.
My God, it was terrible. I prayed to a God I don't even believe in to take my life. Of course, he didn't answer me.
Up next, live music from Little Boots, the electropop singer and musician with the famously tiny feet. That's next on Soundcheck.
I'm flying, climbing, floating through time. See it all with my naked eye. The world's revolving like it's mine.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Little Boots is the stage name of Victoria Hesketh, a British electropop singer who burst onto the dance scene 4 years ago when she topped the BBC's Sound of 2009 poll, following in the footsteps of artists like 50 Cent, Adele, and Mika. Now, Little Boots is back with her second album. It's called Nocturnes, and she is here with us in the studio today with her band to play some of it for us. Here is Little Boots live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
from England. That is Little Boots, live in the Soundcheck studio with a song called Broken Record. Little Boots is the work of singer and songwriter Victoria Hesketh, playing synthesizers of various species over there in the studio, with Lauren Verge on more synths and backing vocals, Chris Kemsley on synthesizers, and Ben Chetwood playing drums, both acoustic and electronic. Victoria, to you and the band, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much.
So that song, Broken Record, that actually sounds like it could have been on your first record, on Hands. You know, it has that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the production's a bit more analog and stuff, but yeah, I could. There's the first song that I did, Stuck on Repeat. I wanted it to kind of be like a part two to that song,
right?
Because this whole album's kind of about me getting back to the start, and you know, the things that I started out doing, and kind of reclaiming that.
Mm-hmm. But most of the rest of this new album, Nocturnes, I mean, even the title suggests something a little darker, you know. I mean, nocturnes can be very dreamy and stuff, but they can also be sort of unsettled, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that both of those, you know, dreamy and that kind of darkness are themes that are in the album. And I mean, I guess it's very dance influenced, so that's very naturally nighttime music. I've been DJing a lot as well the last couple of years, so it turns you into this real night owl, and all those influences of, you know, being in all these different cities in the middle of the night, that's definitely fed back into the record and the sound of it, yeah.
Yeah. Although when I hear Nocturne as a title, I think of, you know, Chopin or Debussy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I used to play like Chopin Nocturnes when I was little and learning piano, so it's kind of a little nod to that as well.
Oh, okay. But the album is also like a history lesson of electronic music. I mean, you seem to be drawing from everything as far back as Kraftwerk.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first album was quite 80s synth pop referential, like quite hard on its sleeve about that. So I really wanted this to be, you know, not so specific and so like pastiche, to be drawing from lots of different places. And I love electronic music, and electronic music with personality and with heart and emotion in it. And a lot of electronic music at the minute, I find, is lacking a bit of personality. So I'm trying to draw from all these classic references to give it some of that.
So the old, as they call it, krautrock of bands like Kraftwerk, the disco of Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah, definitely early disco as well, and old like Chicago house as well. There's a lot of influences.
Right, there. Chicago, Detroit, that whole acid house music scene.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was kind of hand in hand with the DJ, me going back and filling in all these gaps in my record collection of things I was aware of but hadn't really delved into. So it was a bit of a journey of discovery for me as well, which you can probably hear on the album, you know, if I just found a record and got excited and gone, let's put this drum machine on this song, and you can kind of hear me finding things out as I went along.
Now, a couple of, you know, little things that went by real quick in that song, but probably worth mentioning. There's the highly processed sound of your voice when you switched from the mic you are currently talking on to the little mic next to it. That's like a, I guess it's not a real vocoder, it's too small.
Yeah,
but
it's not analog, but
it's that kind of effect.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. It's a pretty good digital vocoder. I mean, I'd love to have an old one, but it's a bit impractical.
Well, that's what I'm getting at here, is you seem to be going for the analog sound, the pre-digital sound. Is there something to that that
works for you? Yeah, I think it's combined with what I was saying about a lot of electronic music at the moment. You know, because everybody's making music on computers in their bedroom, everyone's using the same software, the same preset sounds, and it's making all this electronic music not really have much personality. It all sounds really similar. And I think if you go back and take the time and the care to, you know, use all this old gear and find stuff, that it's got just got a warmth to it and a different feeling that, you know, it sounds more human, because even though it's electronic, it's audio and it's going out of time or out of tune, and you know, it's just got a bit more humanization into it. Like, even those Kraftwerk records, even though they're very robotic, they're still quite warm, and there's some kind of depth and feeling in there.
Absolutely. And so at the end of the song, when you switch to the Korg synthesizer, you can be tuning that on the fly.
This guy's analog, yeah. I mean, all these guys are. It's only this one that's that's digital.
You talk about, you know, taking the time to do it right. I mean, you topped this annual BBC poll in 2009, and in the pop world, that's the moment to strike.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, you take another 4 years to make this record.
Well, no, I put the first album out when that happened, so I guess that was in time with that. Yeah, it's been kind of a drawn-out process, and I would have liked it to not take quite as long. But, you know, looking back, I think actually it's made the album that it is. And unless I'd taken the time to find the right people to work with, find Tim Goldsworthy to produce the album, and, you know, get all the best songs for it, and I don't think it would have been the same album. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's such a... Everyone's obsessed with rushing things and with, you know, having this constant stream of stuff. And I think actually it's good to just try and do something really good quality that you're really proud of.
And you have that kind of ability because it's an independent release on your own label now,
yeah, which is just a lot better for me because I think the major label system, it can be very restrictive. And, there's a, you know, around the first time, it was more everyone else had already made up their mind what kind of artist I was. And I kind of realized, like, hang on, I actually need a say in this, you know. And so rather going back to that system, I've done it my own way and set up my own label. And it's great. I mean, it's a lot of work, but I've got complete creative control and I'm really, really enjoying it. It's really liberating.
The results of the new record called Nocturnes by the artist Little Boots. They're performing for us here in the Soundcheck studio. The album begins with Motorway and Confusion, two songs that sort of go back to what you were saying before, Victoria, about, you know, they have the kind of the pulse, the steady rhythm, the forward movement of dance music.
Yeah.
But when you listen to the words, it's like, yeah, they're tinged with melancholy and regret and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess those songs are, I mean, Motorway's a very escapist kind of song and Confusion's a big bundle of frustration, which I definitely have been felt at times in the last few years. I think that's the thing. I wanted to take all these dance influences and references, but I also wanted to make a record that had a lot of personality and still telling stories and that people could listen to outside of a club. It's not necessarily a club record. So, yeah, there's definitely stories in there. I mean, Motorway is about when I was a teenager and constantly trying to escape my hometown in the north of England and spent a lot of night driving to gigs on these deserted, dark motorways. So, yeah, it's, I mean, it's kind of got that Autobahn feel, I guess.
All right. You want to do these songs for us?
Yeah, definitely.
Little Boots performing live on Soundcheck, Motorway and Confusion.
Thank you. your brain games. Oh, did you think that you could break my heart again? Everything's changed. Oh, are you happy that you're driving me insane? You're playing games. Oh, did you think that you could break my heart again? Everything's changed. Oh, are you happy that you're driving me insane? Everything's changed. You're not the
the British electropop artist known as Little Boots, a.k.a. Victoria Hesketh, live on Soundcheck with Lauren Verge and Chris Kemsley adding synths and backing vocals, Ben Chetwood on drums, and the opening two songs from the new album called Nocturnes by Little Boots, Motorway, leading directly into Confusion. And Victoria, where does the name Little Boots come from?
It's because I've got really small feet. It's kind of a dumb nickname from my best friend.
You've been doing some DJing. That was a nice segue there from Motorway into Confusion. The tempo, you know, kept the people moving.
Yeah, that's how we do it live. We try to like mix a few of the songs together. It's a lot harder than actually DJing, like mixing two songs live. It's pretty hard to coordinate everyone.
Well, Victoria, it has been a real pleasure having you with us here on Soundcheck today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A little more from Little Boots' latest record called Nocturnes. You can listen to it again at soundcheck.org. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, as we approach the 100th anniversary of The Rite of Spring, our look back at Stravinsky's piece continues with a conversation about the work with the American Symphony Orchestra's music director and Bard College president, Leon Botstein. And don't forget to get your tickets to see Vicky Chow perform a solo piano arrangement of The Rite of Spring in the Green Space on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. It's the 100th anniversary that day. Tickets are available now at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Also on the show, Pulitzer Prize-winning sports writer and essayist Ira Burko joins us to talk about the intersection of music and sports and to share some of his favorite songs. And live music from the party-happy beatmakers of French Horn Rebellion, a band that features, yes, the French horn. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC and New York Public Radio. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team, which might at any given moment include Paul Schneider, George Wellington, Bill O'Neill, and or Jason Isaac. The show is produced, always, by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop, with Alex Kappelman and our intern Caroline Scannell. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.